Hello, everybody. Welcome back into your latest episode of Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today's as your host, Evan Sider, and my co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSider. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. You also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page, NRA, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support there is very appreciated, as always. I also want to remind you guys about our title sponsor for today's show, which is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. Go and take advantage of our deal using promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off your first order of Built Bars. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to take advantage of the best protein bar ever. Let's dive into our latest what if today, Brendan, because this one I think is going to be a really fun one, because another one like we talked about on Wednesday, as far as the defining moment of the Ryan Madonna era, I think this move could have either been disastrous or brilliant, but I think it's interesting the Suns just were the ones reportedly that backed out of this deal, because Kyrie Irving was supposed to be on the way to the Phoenix Suns in the summer of 2017. But from what I read from Jason Lloyd, the Athletic, the trade would have looked just like this. It would have been a three-team trade between the Pacers, the Cavaliers, and the Suns. And it would have led to Kyrie and Channing Frye, the former Sun, returning to Phoenix from Cleveland with Kyrie Irving. The Pacers would receive Josh Jackson, number four pick in the draft, where his value was absolutely the highest that it ever will be at this point. Hadn't played a game in the NBA. Along with Jared Dudley, Amon Shumpert, and picks. And then the Cavaliers would receive Paul George and Eric Bledsoe. How different would the not only the Suns be, but the NBA be if this big mega deal happened?
I'm honestly, you know, I'm really fascinated by the mechanisms that went into LeBron's second tenure with the Cavs, like all of them. You know, there's the famous Paul George three-way deal that would have put Kevin Love, I think, in Denver. You know, there's so many things along the way because of the way LeBron structured his contracts. I think there's so many, and a lot of them tend to include the Suns, I think in part because Eric Bledsoe is a Rich Paul client. So he seemed to be included in a lot of those rumors. I think he was part of that Paul George thing as well. But when it comes to the Kyrie deal, it's one of the things I've been most adamant. I haven't left my hill to die on with this trade since it happened. I think when you have the chance to get a top 10 or 15 guy in the NBA, no matter what it is, as long as most of the circumstances surrounding that acquisition are sound, like, you have to go for it. And I just think we talked about with LaMarcus Aldridge the other day that LMA probably wasn't a good enough player to be worth the hype, so to speak, but Kyrie definitely is. I think Kyrie is the best player the Suns had a reasonable shot at during this rebuild. And when you look back, the fact that they ended up with none of these types of players, they never got that superstar. They're still questing for that guy. I think it only cements how much of a mistake it was to not pursue this more aggressively.
I definitely agree with you there. I remember writing a column over at Bright Side of the Sun during this point. I think it was late July, early August when this stuff was all breaking. And I was definitely in the camp like you, Brent, that they should have pulled the trigger on this. I know Josh Jackson, he had to play a game yet. We were all high on Josh Jackson's potential with how he was advertised from Kansas, what we saw in his 1 year there. But I think the proven commodity like Kyrie Irving and the player, I know this is more of an off the court standpoint, but with the team like the Phoenix Suns at this point in 2017, I think their popularity is probably at its lowest at this point in this rebuild, this long tenure rebuild. Fans are getting very impatient. I think what would have really been interesting, I know Kyrie and Devin Booker would have been a lot of fun as a backcourt there, but Telstra Resort Arena would have been popping, Brent. It would have been a lot more people in there. Kyrie would have sold tickets. They would have sold lots of tickets, in my opinion, and Kyrie would have been all over Phoenix alongside Devin Booker. I think from that standpoint, I know Robert Sarver, I don't know how much he had input on this, but from an ownership standpoint, making money, Kyrie would have brought that to Telstra Resort Arena, and that's been missing for over a decade.
Yeah, I think we can get in later on to if Kyrie would have stayed. I mean, that's really what all of this hinges on. But in that first year, it's undeniable that the team would have been more entertaining, better, more revenue generation, to the extent that any fans really care about that. But when you were at such a low point like this franchise was, it all comes in a package deal in the form of Kyrie Irving or whatever superstar you're able to land. But like I said, this was the guy that they truly had a chance at. They had a competitive package. They were selling high on a lot of their young players. They were making use of the relationship between Bledsoe and LeBron by way of Rich Paul. I think it all actually did line up. There's a lot that you know, you can go through, oh, the Suns could have gotten Kawhi Leonard. Yeah, no, not really. Like, I think a lot of fans tend to do that, where when a team is rebuilding, anybody who becomes available, we act as if the team, any young team, had a legitimate shot. And I don't think that's true. And that's what sets this what if apart to me, is that they genuinely could have gotten Kyrie Irving, and they were the ones really who said no. They didn't necessarily say no, but they refused to include Josh Jackson here. I guess it's really difficult to look at this clearly without taking into account what we know about the way that these guys' careers have gone in the interim. Obviously, on the Kyrie end, he's dealt with injuries. The trade to Boston did not pan out for that franchise. We really don't know what's going to happen in Brooklyn. He's already hurt there. And from the Suns' standpoint, like, Josh Jackson flamed out before the beginning of his rookie deal. So it was sort of a lose-lose that this thing didn't happen. But as clearly as you said, you wrote about this at the time, this is recent enough that we were both really day-to-day following and covering this squad. Do you think they were smart to not include Jackson, sort of eliminating the trouble he got into last year? Do you think it was correct to put him as a non-negotiable, a non-starter in these negotiations?
Yeah, I wouldn't have done what they did. I think Josh Jackson, of course, was a consensus top three, top five prospect in the 2017 draft, but Kyrie Irving is on a whole different level. Josh Jackson, if he was going to pan out the way we thought he would have back in 2017, he's going to take at least a year or two to develop. And knowing the organization and the patience really was running thin there, I think you could have been in a position where if you do trade Josh Jackson and whatever else, like alongside Eric Bledsoe to Cleveland, Jackson would go to Indiana in this scenario, I think you would have the ability to see how Josh Jackson would develop, but you also have wings on the roster. You have TJ Warren still there. I know McDonough was a big fan of TJ Warren, gave him that big extension, and eventually James Jones eventually traded off, as we know, last summer to shed salary for Ricky Rubio. But you still have TJ Warren around. I know Warren wasn't the best defender. He was a good shooter, though. I do think Josh Jackson at this point shouldn't have been untouchable, because on this roster, the only untouchable at this point in 2017 should have been Devin Booker. I think everyone else on the team, if you're trying to get a superstar player, and if you're in Ryan McDonough's shoes, trying to save your job, so to say, I think everyone outside of your young franchise star should be on the table. And I think not including Josh Jackson in this deal was a mistake. And you look back on it now in hindsight, it was a huge mistake.
It definitely looks that way. Although you could also make the case that if they get Kyrie and convince him to stay, that paying him a max deal would have been a pretty big mistake. It's certainly, I'm sure there's not a lot of Nets fans who are excited about that proposition right now. So that is what makes this one from both sides. You know, we've had a lot where we talked about it and the Suns just got screwed. I think this one, there are so many different tentacles of it, especially because it's so recent. Like, we haven't exactly seen how each person and each franchise's future has played out. We're still in that future for these guys. But I do agree. I think Jackson was a pretty high floor prospect. I thought he fit well. I think everybody, for the most part, was a believer in the Jackson Booker pairing. But with that being said, and we'll get into it later in the show, I think this franchise was actually pretty well suited to cater and build around Kyrie Irving. I am pretty bullish on the idea of their ability to retain him, and I think compete with him pretty quickly. But my other question to wrap up this segment to get your sense of is, so the final offer reportedly was Bledsoe, Bender, and the 2018 Heat pick that the Suns eventually traded for Mikal Bridges. Would you have accepted that? Like, do you think the Cavs were wrong to say no to that trade, knowing what we eventually saw them pull the trigger on, which was a poo-poo platter of nothing from Boston, basically? They got a lot worse than Bledsoe, Bender, and a pick when it was all said and done. Do you think it was a mistake from Cleveland's standpoint to not do this trade on their end?
I think they held off in the right stance, because I know at this point, Dragan Bender is only a year or two into his career, and he hadn't shown much at all in his career so far. And he was already some buzz about, is he going to be a draft bust? Is he going to flim after his rookie contract in Phoenix? And the 2018 Heat pick, as we all know, went on to be Mikal Bridges, and turning that, it's still going on. As we talked about last week on the show, I think it's in Oklahoma City now, where you can really use that for a huge trade show if you want to down the line. Cleveland could have. But I do think Cleveland held off for the right reasons. I think they could have gotten a better deal. Of course, as we all know, it turned out to be a pretty bad deal in hindsight, because you get Isaiah Thomas, who they would have probably expected to play a Kyrie Irving role. Definitely didn't happen there. You go and also get a couple other small players, a couple small picks, and they didn't really do much with those. But I do think, like, the proven commodity that Isaiah was, he came out with the best year of his career. I think that is a nice gamble to make from the cap standpoint. That obviously they didn't really know much with the hip injury at that point. I think it was later on.
That's its own what if.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been, I think, a really intriguing scenario if Isaiah was fully healthy on that team, because I think he could have played not close to Kyrie, but at least giving you like 20 plus points per game and a solid secondary option to LeBron there. But I do think the Caps, the Caps all for the right reasons there, because I just don't think Bledsoe and then Dragan Bender as a secondary piece there really is that appealing. I think Josh Jackson, like we mentioned earlier in the segment, I think he was the missing piece, and why the Suns don't want to give him up is for obvious reasons. He's a top five pick in the draft and a building block, but I think the Cavs are right in the decision not to accept that kind of deal.
Yeah. Just to clarify too, so that Heat pick was the 16th pick that became Zaire Smith, not the future one. Okay. But either way, I mean, they're basically equivalent, but just because I think I misspoke there. And then from the Cavs standpoint, I think you're right. Like, I don't think it was dumb to let this one go. I just think, you know, what they ultimately pulled off was clearly a step back, and there's a whole bunch more reasons for that. You know, souring to the point where Irving is actually demanding a trade rather than this situation where they're sort of shopping him, but it's not gotten to that fraying point yet. And some other things along the way that I think had just made it tougher to stomach. And that's why they lost so much leverage and pull off that trade with Boston that screwed them over in the end. But I wanted to jump into the next segment. We can talk a little bit more about what the Suns look like. You know, do they improve some of the same stuff we talked about with Aldridge, but just with Kyrie, who's another step above that guy with their level of play, star power, etc. Before that though, just a quick reminder about our fantastic title sponsor, which is Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar in the world. Tastes just like a candy bar. I'm actually out of our sample box, and I am remembering as I read this to place my next order, because they really were delicious. They are super cost effective. I mean, especially using our promo code Locked On to get $10 off your first order. You just get a little pack with a bunch of different flavors, something different for you every day. 16. They're actually upping it to 20 this week. As we told you earlier in the week, they're adding a ton of new flavors for you guys. But yeah, like I've told you, they're just this light, nice snack. There's something to hold you over between meals. Take you on, you know, whether you're exercising, getting a workout, or just need a little bit more energy. They're going to keep you going with the right kinds of food. Instead of slamming an energy drink or doing something like that, just eat right throughout the day. Built Bar can be part of that for you. I like to take them when I go on a hike, or like I've said before, just if I'm eating a late dinner, sometimes that can help. This week only, you can get an additional $5 off every box of bars that you purchase. That's in addition to our $10 off promo code for all of you. As I said, four new flavors: peanut butter banana, pineapple upside down cake, coconut pecan pie, and blueberry lemon. They're getting more experimental here. I can't wait to try them. They've all been delicious. The fruity ones you might think are kind of weird to mix with chocolate. Those are actually some of my favorites. I had the orange. It was maybe the best one. I saved it for last because I wasn't sure, and it definitely impressed me. So to take advantage, get that $5 off this week, order right away, pair it with our promo code Locked On at builtbar.com. Again, promo code Locked On, all one word, to get $10 off that first order. Use the promo code Locked On for $10 off at builtbar.com. Okay. So to make my case really quickly that I was hinting at the end of our first segment, Evan, I think the more that I look back at this thing, I think it was easy to say, well, you know, the obvious case against doing this trade from Phoenix's perspective is you're getting this guy for just one year, probably. You know, you have to spend that entire season convincing Kyrie Irving to re-sign. We saw that did not go well for the Boston Celtics, and I'm not positive it would have worked here. But I do think this team was a decent group that was disguised as a tanking team. Ultimately, like, you look back at the guys that were on this roster, you know, they still have Tyson Chandler's still around and playing decently well. I guess Jared Dudley probably would have left, but you mentioned TJ Warren, obviously Devin Booker coming into his own. You still have the two picks from the 2016 draft and flexibility. If you're getting rid of Eric Bledsoe, the salaries pretty much match. Phoenix was a cap space team for the majority of McDonough's tenure. They just didn't really use it wisely or sometimes didn't use it at all because they were trying to lose. I think you could have turned this group. I know this trade would have happened a little bit later into the summer, not exactly a perfect time to build, but you would have had trade flexibility. You would have been probably an appealing team for lower end free agents that might be lasting into the later part of the summer to come, not chase a ring, but be part of a competitive team and play a real role. You would have had that to offer. I think that, I don't know if I'm going to guarantee they would have made the playoffs, but I don't think it's necessarily fair to say, like, simplify it to the point of just saying, well, does Kyrie Irving change this team from a tanking team to a contender? I think that's oversimplifying. They would have continued to build. This would have signified, okay, we're sort of done with the full-out tanking and we're moving to a new era, and they would have operated differently. I think they could have become more competitive and potentially pushed for the playoffs with Kyrie being that first domino.
Yeah, I agree. I think they would have been a very entertaining team, maybe not a playoff team. I think they'd be probably like a 9-10 seed, maybe a high 30s win team, just be competitive most nights with Kyrie on board. Just, they're so young in this roster still at this point that I don't know if Kyrie would be enough on his own to push him there. But Devin Booker, if he does continue to ascend like we think he would, I think that's a very fun and intriguing option as far as if they do sneak into the playoffs, it could be a really hard out if Booker and Irving are out firing on all cylinders there. But looking at this roster, the starting five, like you mentioned, Kyrie Irving would have been the point guard, Booker at shooting guard, TJ Warren at small forward. What we know about Earl Watson used to be the head coach then. You have Marquese Chris at power forward and Tyson Chandler at center. Do you like that starting five? If you just familiarize it back then, I know Marquese Chris, we all know, flamed out, but back then he was still very much a high profile athletic forward who really could have feasted off lobs from Kyrie more often than that.
Sure, I do. I think it's pretty good. You also have PJ Tucker. That's the year that he gets traded. So I think you probably don't trade him. And, you know, he's never had a bad word to say really about the Suns. I do think he appreciates the opportunity they gave him to revitalize his career. I could definitely see him signing another contract here. Those are just some of the ways, like you're saying, you get more of an opportunity to stabilize the rotation. I think one of the problems with how the Suns built this roster during the rebuild was that they just had too many guys at the same position, too many guys that did the same thing, not really a lot of clarity as to what the hierarchy was, and obviously no point guard really to put it all together. Even Bledsoe played really well this year, but by the end of his time with Phoenix, he's really more of a score-first guy. I think he kind of, the writing was on the wall that I'm entering my prime, this isn't going to work for me. And he was not really the type of point guard they needed, not making guys better necessarily. So you put Kyrie there, you tell him, you're our guy, you are the leader of this team, the leader of this franchise, we want to sign you long-term, and you just build differently. So I think that rotation probably strikes me as what, similar to what you said, probably a team that is in the playoff hunt all year, but maybe doesn't quite come through. I'm curious what you think, though, in terms of how does it help or hurt the young players? I can't help but think that the two power forwards here, assuming that Jackson would be the one to go in that trade, you keep Bender and Chris. Even Derek Jones was on the roster. This was his biggest minutes season as a Sun. Even guys like Alan Williams or Alex Len, like, I can't help but think that if you have more hierarchy and clarity on the roster and a playmaker that's more capable and exciting than Eric Bledsoe, that those guys maybe, you know, they probably don't turn into superstars by any means, but I do think things probably go a little better for them.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think a player like Kyrie helps pick up people around him. I know obviously in Boston that it's a little stained as far as the relationship with the young guys there, but he is a star enough in this league where he could have elevated guys like Alex Len, Dragan Bender, Marquese Chris, give them a lot easier shots than they were getting in their careers and maybe help them preserve a long-term role off the bench wherever they would be on the Suns or elsewhere, because Kyrie is one of those guys who can help you really extend your career as far as that goes. I know he's more of a score first point guard, but we know his handle, we know his flashy passing ability. It would have been a lot of fun to watch, of course, but I'm going backtracking just a few seconds, Brandon, because I want to hit on, I think you talked about 2018, 2017, 18, get Kyrie Irving on board, and then 2018 free agency, they signed Trevor Ariza. As we all know, it did not work out at all. But the Suns, like you mentioned, were in a flexibility position where they could have created max cap space that summer. And if you have Kyrie Irving and Devin Booker on the same team, obviously Booker probably took as much shots as he did in 2017-18, almost 20 per game with Irving on board. But you have those two. You have Booker as sort of the guy's going to eventually take the baton from Irving later on in his career, you imagine, if he stays in Phoenix long term. I think Kyrie Irving, Devin Booker, Earl Watson, who's a players coach at that time, you could have at least gotten to those meetings with the 2018 free agent class, which was a big class, by the way, LeBron, Paul George. Maybe you don't get any of those guys, but you're at least in the meeting, so to say, with a player like Kyrie Irving on board.
I think you are for sure. I mean, we saw the effect that Kyrie had over Kevin Durant's free agency this year. And I don't necessarily think that the Suns having Kyrie is enough of a reason for Durant to jump ship 1 year earlier than he did from the Warriors. But I agree. You're setting yourself up to be an appealing destination. And I think the thing, you mentioned it a minute ago, I think the thing that really went wrong for Kyrie in Boston, and you know, maybe this is actually leading into what we want to talk about in the last segment here, but what didn't work for them was, I think there wasn't a full commitment on either end. Kyrie wasn't sold on the idea of being the figurehead of the Celtics organization. I think there were things that got under his skin there. And I think that by way of having the Celtics be so well suited to compete already with Al Horford, who I don't think it was part of the problem really, but, and then the young guys, Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown especially, I don't think that it felt to him as if there was a full commitment to him as that guy. I think the Suns would have been much better suited to do that. I understand Devin Booker was there. I think they fit really well together, at least offensively. And I just think, you know, the Suns, the whole rebuild was geared toward acquiring a player like Kyrie. I think that they would have felt like that was their guy, whereas the Celtics, their whole building process was about getting those young guys and building through them. And when Kyrie came, it was like, great, we'll add you to the mix, and not so much, we're going to turn everything over to you. And I think that's where the fracturing started to happen. So I just think the Suns had a roster and an organizational structure that was going to just cater toward Kyrie. I think he was going to walk in that door and be the end all be all of this franchise right away. And I think, you know, for better or worse, that's what he wanted. And I think the Suns could have given it to him.
Quick reminder before we go on to our last segment, we're going to dive into the Kyrie-Booker pairing, how Booker would have developed alongside Kyrie Irving. Does Kyrie even stay long-term in Phoenix, and how different this roster would be than it is nowadays? I want to remind you guys, if you haven't already subscribed to Locked On Suns, whatever streaming platform you're listening on, whether it's Bright Side of the Sun, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, whatever streaming platform you're listening to, just type in Locked On Suns. It'll be right up there on the search bar, and just follow the subscribe button. It'll be right there for you. If you enjoy what you're listening to as well, make sure to leave us a 5-star review and leave us a written comment. We always love reading those, and we've been really looking forward to more of those lately. So if you want to get on the action, maybe have us answer a few questions off of that, go onto our iTunes page and drop in a written review with a 5-star review. And we'll obviously be there for you guys all throughout this time. So we'll be back to you guys in just a second with our final seven, talk about Kyrie Irving and what could have been in Phoenix. All right, Brent, let's talk about, I think what's the most intriguing part about this what-if scenario with Kyrie Irving is, how does Devin Booker, you think, develop alongside Kyrie Irving? Because, of course, we know Booker is the bona fide number one option here. He was taking, like I mentioned, 20 shots per game in 2017-18, 18-19. He went to a smaller role with more talent around him in 19-20. How do you think Booker looks alongside Kyrie Irving as the really cemented 1B option that Kyrie's 1A?
Well, even more than what we said with LaMarcus Aldridge, I would say that if you have Kyrie here, it's going to be his offense. You know, we said that a little bit with Aldridge, especially because he would have been put in place earlier, even earlier in Booker's career, the same summer that the Suns drafted Devin Booker. So with Kyrie, this is 2 years afterward. You already have a taste for what Booker is as a playmaker. I think it would be a pretty big adjustment for him, because I don't think you're going to bring Kyrie Irving in after, you know, a championship and all the rest and tell him that he's not running the offense or he's going to be the co-point guard with Devin Booker. So I think it would be a big adjustment. I think it would be something closer to what we saw him do this year, but maybe with an even less pass first point guard and more of a score first point guard, which is what we know Kyrie is. I think it's hard to ignore. I think back right now to what we saw in a few dozen games from Kyrie, but with the Nets, he had a roster not too different from what the Suns roster would have looked like. And I don't think he was very good at keeping everybody involved and engaged. I mean, the stats show that they were as good, if not better, when Spencer Dinwiddie was in there. Caris LeVert seemed like his best games a lot of the time tended to coincide with Kyrie not playing. I do think we would be looking at a different past few seasons for Devin Booker, whether that's better or worse, or if they could have figured out a way to be better than the sum of their parts, I'm not necessarily certain on. I feel like it's kind of hard to guess that far down the road, but I don't think we would be looking at the same all-around offensive juggernaut that Booker has become.
Yeah, I agree. It would have definitely looked a lot different. But I do think, like you hinted at before in the previous segments, that the pairing between Irving and Booker, I think, would have meshed pretty well. I mean, we see CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard in Portland, but I think it's fair to say, Brandon, if Booker reaches potential like we see and continues to develop alongside Irving, that could have been the most explosive backcourt in the NBA in time.
It probably would have been. Yeah, I mean, especially because they are so young, which is one thing we haven't said. Kyrie, would be playing out the rest of his prime, basically, with the Suns, and Booker would be approaching it. So as far as timeline goes, they're pretty simpatico. It would have required a good coach. I think it would have required shooting. Like, I do think you can build those two guys into one of the best offenses in the NBA with the right parts around them. I don't know if like TJ Warren is quite the example of the right part, if Marquese Chris and Dragan Bender are, but like I said, I do just think like this would have signaled such a sweeping change. It would have meant that you're building toward competitiveness starting as soon as 2016 rather than, the continued, and they were tanking until last year, right? So they would have started to put all of their chips into the center of the table. You would see trades of Marquese Chris or Dragan Bender, of TJ Warren, of Alex Len, rather than just waiting it out, which is what the Suns ended up doing. Obviously, as we said with Aldridge, I think you don't see DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges in this roster because they're better sooner. So their picks aren't as good. You know, they would have lost. Was the Josh Jackson version of the thing, of the offer, did that also have one of the Heat picks in it, or was it just going to be Jackson?
I think it was one of the picks that was involved. Okay. I forget if it was either the Suns pick or the Heat pick that you mentioned, but it was a pick involved.
Yeah, so you lose a little bit of your assets there, obviously, by making that trade. But I guess I'm just curious to you, because I don't feel like you've necessarily said it, is do you think they would have been able to convince Kyrie, knowing how prickly he can be and knowing what his priorities are and all of that, do you think they would have been able to keep him?
I don't. Personally, I do not think he would have stayed. I think it would have been a really fun 2 years, of course, maybe make the playoffs as a 6th or 7th seed in this final year of his contract in Phoenix, maybe stay for 2 years, except his player option. But I do think, like Devin Booker, he was coming into his own at this point, and I just think he was meant to be the number one option on this team. I know we've seen over the years that he's going to be continue to grow, and I think Kyrie Irving, as we all know, it looks like it was down to L.A. or Boston for what he wanted, where he wanted to go in that free agency class this past year. Big markets. I know Phoenix is a big market itself, but I do think that nowadays these superstar players really prefer the big markets, the marketing ability there. And I, even though Phoenix is only an hour flight from LA, I just think it matters to some of these players. And maybe Kyrie goes somewhere like a Brooklyn still, or he goes to a New York Knicks or the Lakers. I think he would have ended up somewhere else, but I think it's a risk for McDonough that he should have taken, because we all know if he didn't make a big move, he's going to eventually end up losing his job. And he would have at least tried in the end. Like, we got Kyrie Irving on board for 2 years with Devin Booker. It was a very fun time. And if I lose my job over this, whatever, because I finally pushed my chips, and he's never had a chance to push his chips, and he was reluctant to, over a player like Josh Jackson and Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, I'm curious. Like, I think it's hard to tell. The idea, the concept of what Kyrie Irving wants, I think is still very much up in the air, even now, 4 years later that we're talking about this. So I don't know, of course. Like, it's a guess on anybody's part for what would have made him happy. It doesn't even feel like with Kenny Atkinson already getting canned in Brooklyn and their season really not turning out the way that anyone wanted, even without Kevin Durant. I don't think Kyrie has found exactly what he wants, but I do just think what we do know, which we learned a lot about him from Boston, I think the Suns would have been set up to turn more of their franchise. And again, I said before, for better or worse, I'm not necessarily saying that that's the best path here. The best outcome from this entire rebuild would have been this trade, but they would have been able to give Kyrie what I think Kyrie wanted. I think the Suns could have given him. It's just a matter of, is that enough? Are you able to keep his attention and his passion? It seems like that's really a challenge right now. So it would have been a fun guy to cover, though. I can say that for sure.
Yeah, the orange carpet, so to say, would have rolled out for Kyrie Irving because it would have been his city right away. You get a superstar like that in Phoenix, it would have been Kyrie Irving's city, and he would have definitely been the number one really attraction for people coming in and out of town in Phoenix. You want to go see the Suns and Kyrie Irving and Devin Booker play. That would have been a hot ticket. It would have definitely been a lot of fun there. But I think with Kyrie, before we close up the show, looking at this trade one more time, the Suns would have gotten Kyrie Irving, Channing Frye. The Cavs get Paul George, Eric Bledsoe, and the Pacers get Josh Jackson, Dudley Shumpert, and picks. Who do you think makes up the best out of that deal if it were to have happened? Because I think the Cavs maybe win a title with Paul George and Eric Bledsoe just because I think George matched up better against that Warriors team. They have more long, lanky, two-way wings. I think they have a better chance of being that Warriors team. But the Pacers, I mean, with what we know about Josh Jackson now, the Pacers would have been stuck in purgatory for a very long time if this deal does go through.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's interesting to think with a guy like Jackson, what changes if he's in more of a traditional, consistent, structured organization like Indiana. They've just had so many of the same people in place from Pritchard to Buchanan to Bird all the way through the years. They've just had such consistency there. I wonder if it helps. Nate McMillan, a coach that I think is really, really good at what he does. Not quite the outcome I think they were hoping for. Obviously, the trade they end up doing for Paul George is much, much better. But yeah, that Cleveland aspect of it is interesting. I still think they should have this version of it that you put on the spreadsheet looks even better. But I would have even taken the version that ends up with Bledsoe and Bender and a pick, because I know the whole thing the whole time was, what is LeBron James going to do with the draft pick? But obviously, we know you can cash those in down the line. That 2018 team, I think, was not as far away from winning that series as people think. We know they lost game one because of J.R. Smith. Paul George is the perfect guy to upend what the Warriors like to do. I really, like I said, I'm so fascinated by all these trickle-down things that could have happened during that Cleveland run. And basically none of them happened. They obviously trade Kyrie, but they don't get any of these other secondary stars that they wanted. Kevin Love sticks around but gets just worse and is harder. It's harder for him to stay on the court. And I wish we could have gotten a couple more competitive finals series from Cavs Warriors than we did, because they never were able to put together that contender that could actually match the Hamptons five lineups, the Durant era Warriors. And that was disappointing in its own way. The Suns could have at least done us that favor.
Yeah, it definitely would have been. I think the biggest what if of our podcast history, because I think we started Locked On Suns right when this was going on. And I know Kyrie was really the number one topic in Phoenix in the summer of 2017, because they came oh so close to pulling this deal off and reportedly were the ones who backed out this deal in the end. So any final thoughts you want to cover on Kyrie Irving if you would have actually been a Phoenix Sun?
No, I don't think so. We have a lot more news coming out, so we might turn away from some of this evergreen stuff. But if you guys have other what ifs, I'm sure we could at least throw a segment or two, or maybe even a whole show if you guys like this, which our numbers, I hope, show that you have. But throw them in a review on Apple Podcasts. Throw them in a tweet at us at LockedOnPHXSuns. Put it in the comments section on Bright Side of the Sun if that's how you find us. We would love to do more of your guys' biggest what ifs, because there are a ton, even just as we've seen from this one rebuild.
Yeah, the really endless possibilities here with these what-if scenarios. And I appreciate everyone listening on our latest podcast diving into Kyrie Irving. If this trade does end up going through the Phoenix Suns, how different they would be nowadays in 2020. So we'll be back with you guys on Monday for our next episode here on the podcast.